The core of our sun has a temperature of 15.7 million degrees Kelvin. However, the solar surface or the photosphere is only 5,770 degrees Kelvin. But then something very interesting happens. The temperature starts to increase again as we enter the outer atmosphere of the sun or the corona, where it can reach nearly 2 million degrees Kelvin. So what's up with that? I'm Troy Klein, and in today's podcast, we'll be hearing from Dr. Sten Odenwald. Sten is the chief author and editor of the Sun Earth Day Technology Through Time series. Sten is going to fill us in on this year's first Technology Through Time mystery. Why is the sun's corona so hot?
That turns out to be a really interesting question for astronomers, and actually an embarrassing one in some sense. We've been looking at total solar eclipses for literally thousands of years, and anybody that's actually seen a total solar eclipse knows that the most dramatic thing about it is, well, not only that the moon blocks out the sun, and that's kind of a grim thing, but you also see the spectacular corona that surrounds the blacked-out sun. And so the corona is something that people have observed going all the way back to ancient Chinese astronomers. So now we're in a situation where, okay, let's learn more about the corona. And when people did that in the 1800s with a new instrument called the spectroscope, they discovered that, there were things that they found in the corona light that they didn't find in the light from the rest of the sun. And one of those things was a whole bunch of mysterious atomic lines that simply nobody could figure out what these were all about. The way things work is that when you take an atom and you heat it up or have it collide with other atoms, the electrons get excited, they gain and lose energy, and each atom, each element produces its own fingerprint set of lines, lines of light in the spectrum. And these lines can identify an element very uniquely because they're so unique to the element. Now, what happened was that in the 1800s, people went through and cataloged all the lines and said, okay, those lines come from the element iron, and those lines come from the element calcium, and these other ones over here come from the element sodium, and so forth and so on. And they got really good at matching up lines on the sun with things that they could see under laboratory conditions. But then when they looked at the corona, they found lines that didn't match up with anything that they had seen in the laboratory. And so they called these things the coronium lines, and they actually thought that there was a brand new element called coronium that was present in the corona of the sun that was producing these atomic lines. Well, in 1942, a Swedish astronomer spent some time looking at this whole problem, scratching his head about what these coronium lines could possibly be. And he figured out that if you take an element like iron and you strip off something like 13 of its 26 electrons, it will produce a fingerprint in lines that looks nothing like ordinary iron. And in fact, many of those lines turned out to match up very nicely with the lines that were seen in the solar corona. So this was a major discovery that, wow, you know, we've got not only atoms that can produce these lines, but if you take some of the electrons out of the atoms, those produce a whole different set of lines. And in this case, they matched up very nicely with what was found in the corona. Well, it was kind of a neat discovery, but the only problem is that it raised a fairly ugly question. If you look at the surface of the sun and you stuck a thermometer into the surface, it might measure something like 5,700 degrees Kelvin, okay, or 6,000 degrees centigrade, or 10,000 degrees Fahrenheit, depending on what temperature scale you want to use. If you stuck that same temperature thermometer up in the corona, these lines of iron suggested that the corona was at a temperature of over 2 million degrees. So how in the world could you have a cold solar surface at 6,000 degrees producing an atmosphere above it that was at 2 million degrees? So by 1942, and the work by Bengt Edlin, who was the Swedish astronomer, this great mystery sort of came up. You know, why is the corona of the sun so hot? Where does it become 2 million degrees when the surface of the sun is only at 6,000 degrees. It's kind of like if you were standing in your kitchen and you've got this hot plate that's boiling water, and the hot plate is maybe 200 or 300 degrees Fahrenheit. And then if you were to back away from that hot plate, instead of things getting colder and colder, things got hotter and hotter until in the middle of the room, the temperature was 3,000 degrees. I mean, it's a completely ridiculous situation. So since 1942, solar physicists and astronomers have spent a lot of time trying to understand why the corona of the sun is so hot. The problem is you only have a few things to work with. Aside from space aliens with ray guns and electric heaters, there's no real easy way to heat up a gas to 2 million degrees and keep it that hot all the time. The temperature of the corona stays hot throughout the entire solar activity cycle. It doesn't go, you know, hot and cold with the 11-year sunspot cycle. It stays hot throughout the whole cycle. So whatever is going on to heat up the corona of the sun really doesn't have a whole lot to do with sunspots and what looks like the obvious activity on the surface of the sun. So the physicists came up with a couple of ideas. One has to do with sound waves. Here's a way of thinking about it. If you take a whip, a bull whip, which is a really big one, has a really thick handle, usually about 1 inch in diameter. And the whip is a tapered thing that goes out to a tip that's only, you know, about a millimeter or less in diameter. And what you do when you crack a whip is you put a big pulse of energy into the base of that thing, and this wave travels out into the tip of the whip, going faster and faster and faster as it goes out into the tip, until finally, when this energy gets to that the end of the whip, it moves the end of the whip at the speed of sound, and you hear the crack. So if you have a situation where you take energy and put it into an area that is at high density, and that energy flows into an area that is at low density, you can actually get the low density stuff to move faster. So people thought, well, you know, that's kind of how sound waves work, and maybe there are a lot of sound waves being produced at the surface of the sun from all the convection and turbulence. And basically, if you take a pot of water and put it on the stove and you get it boiling, the first thing that you actually do hear and notice about the boiling water is that it's making the sound of boiling water. So there's sound energy involved when you have stuff boiling. And the surface of the sun certainly is boiling like crazy. You can actually see the boiling of the surface in photographs. The only problem is that people have looked very carefully for sound wave energy going into the corona. And the first thing that they noticed theoretically was that these sound waves tend to get reflected back to the sun. They never really quite make it deep into the corona. And they certainly don't get as far out as where the hot stuff is found, which is almost a million miles above the surface of the sun. Particular measurements that have now been done can actually see some of these sound waves in progress. And unfortunately, it looks like there's just simply not enough energy in the sound waves to really heat up the corona. So that was a real disappointment. The next possibility is to do what the sun does best, and that is the sun produces magnetic fields. Those magnetic fields get tangled up, and when they rearrange themselves, they basically take the energy that's in the magnetism and convert it into heat. It's a process that is called magnetic reconnection. Now, one possibility is you can have all kinds of flares going off on the surface of the sun, and the magnetic energy then heats up the gases, and those gases go into the corona, and so you wind up with a hot corona. That's a really exciting prospect. The only problem is that these events can't really have a whole lot to do with the big sunspots and the big, huge flares that we see all the time. Because, like I said before, those flares happen during times when you have a lot of sunspots and the sun, you know, is in a high state of activity. But the problem is the corona is hot all the time, even when there are no sunspots on the surface or big flares going on. It turns out that the SOHO satellite and now recently the HINOTA satellite have measured what are called micro and nano flares going off on the surface of the sun. These are really teeny tiny flares, But there are so many of them. There are literally thousands and thousands of them all across the solar surface. And so it's hoped that when we understand these better, that we might discover that they are actually the source of the heating of the corona, that there are so many of these things, these little micro flares going off all the time, day and night during the entire sunspot cycle, that maybe added together, they're going to be enough to heat up the corona. And right now, those observations are actually in progress, and maybe we'll know in the next year or so whether or not that's the process. But so far, we only have basically two horses in town, and one of the horses has a broken leg, and the only other one that's actually moving is the one about magnetic reconnection. And we're hoping that that one can actually move to the finish line. If it doesn't, then we're really going to have to scratch our heads and come up with a third way of heating the corona and hope that that is really it. Of course, the way things work in nature is that sometimes nature decides to do everything. There's not just necessarily one thing going on, but maybe there are two or three or four different things going on that actually heat the corona. And maybe that's the way to solve the problem. A little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of something else, and it all adds up to a hot corona. Anyway, so that's for the future. Right now, we have plenty more mysteries to come beyond the mystery of the hot corona. The next mystery is going to be the mystery of the solar neutrinos. For a long time, people wondered where it was that all the neutrinos went from the center of the sun, which is converting hydrogen into helium to produce the solar energy. And that turned out to be a really big mystery for about 30 years. So we're going to explore what that mystery is all about and how we think that that mystery has been solved. Probably one of the few mysteries that we think we have actually solved completely. And beyond that, there are other mysteries to come in future essays. So stay tuned and keep watching this page.
When visiting our website, you'll be able to browse through all of the Technology Through Time essays and the new Sun Earth Day image gallery. That gallery also contains all images associated with the Technology Through Time series. I asked Stan to give us a brief explanation of the three images he chose for this particular article.
The first image in the gallery is a lovely photograph taken of the total solar eclipse as seen from Mauna Kea, Hawaii in 1991. You will see the black disk of the sun, or of the moon, covering the brilliant disk of the sun. And of course, what your eye is drawn to is the wonderful detail in the corona of the sun. Those loops and streamers that you see are very high temperature gases that are trapped in magnetic fields near the sun. Magnetic fields tend to have a kind of a loopy shape to them. So whenever you see loops and things like that in the corona, you know that magnetic fields are somehow involved in making them look that way. Without magnetic fields, all you would see here would be a featureless bright glow, and that would be it. So magnetic fields are kind of like the nature's paintbrush. They actually put details in things that ordinarily would be without any real features at all. The second image is a really spectacular image taken by the YOCO satellite. What you're seeing here is sometimes kind of hard to describe. You're seeing very high temperature gases that are almost up to a million degrees hot. And these gases that you're seeing here, especially in the bright yellowish areas, are trapped in magnetic fields that are anchored to the sun's surface. So the gases there tend to stay around in a small area of space, and so you can see them very intensely by the X-ray light that they produce. Those black areas, they don't mean that there isn't any light being produced by the sun. What it means is that there are very few X-rays being produced by those parts of the sun's surface. To produce X-rays, you have to have gases that are at 100,000 degrees temperature. But the surface of the sun is only at 6,000 degrees temperature, so it's simply not hot enough to produce X-rays over its entire surface. So that's why you'll see areas that are black. The black just means that, yeah, there's very hot gases down there, but in X-ray light, those gases are not producing any X-rays at all. The only X-rays that are coming out are from the very, very hot gases that are trapped in the magnetic fields that you see in the picture. The third and final image is actually not a photograph of anything. It's a computer model that's meant to represent the magnetic field of the sun for a particular time. This turned out to be March 24th, 2006. This is a what's called a physics-based calculation. There is no artwork involved here at all. Every one of those lines is meant to represent an actual magnetic field line computed from physical equations that control how gases produce magnetic fields on the surface of the sun and how those magnetic fields spread out into space. You'll notice that there are an awful lot of loopy things that are closed. And if you'll remember what the total solar eclipse picture looked like, it also had the same kind of loopy things. Well, that's what I was saying before, that those loops you see in the solar eclipse pictures are things you can match up with magnetic fields in the corona of the sun. And this third picture actually shows you what those fields would look like that would make the corona have that kind of a shape. But you'll also notice that there are lines that go off into space without coming back to the surface. Those lines are places where hot gases can stream out from the sun and go off into interplanetary space beyond the orbit of Earth and even Pluto. So those are like water pipes to infinity where gases can freely go out into the rest of the solar system. So that's a little bit about this gallery. I hope you enjoy the pictures, and there are more to come in future episodes.
We are very interested in hearing your questions and comments about the Sun Earth Day podcast. If you have something to say, send an email to sunearthdaypodcast.mail630.gsfc.nasa.gov. For all other details about the Sun Earth Day program, including information about our past Sun Earth Day themes and all podcasts, be sure to visit our website at sunearthday.nasa.gov. Sun Earth Day is a program sponsored by the NASA Sun Earth Connection Education Forum at the Goddard Space Flight Center and at the UC Berkeley Space Sciences Laboratory.
This is Troy Klein signing off.